This is the podcast for May 4th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Gay Republican Shame Spiral, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. I'm not sure if I should have said gay Republican or gay conservative, because apparently, according to Andrew Sullivan, there's a huge difference between the two.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In his imagination, I'm sure there is.
He's imagining that there are still Republicans out there who are going to vote, I don't know how. Mm-hmm. You know, they like Romney because he's a businessman, but they don't go along with any of the right-wing craziness. And I'm sure there are Republicans like that, but they haven't made themselves known.
Well, there are.
It's time.
Watch any rerun of Gilligan's Island, and you'll see at least two of them on that island.
Howell the Third.
Yeah, they're fictional characters, and, you know. No, there are lots of rich, dumb white guys who play golf and only want their taxes cut and who vote for Mitt Romney because he's one of them.
Yeah.
But the stank of the crazy from the kitchen where all of their meals are being prepared is beginning to get, you know, too stinky for them to put up with.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah,
that's the problem.
They've got another conservative they can vote for. His name's Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Who's going to make sure the stock market stays up? So if they're that insulated from everything and don't have to deal with forced ultrasounds, although I would think their daughters would be having and wives would have something to say about that, but
their daughters and wives will be packed off to England.
Yeah, well, that is the point that I've made many times, which is you know. Meghan McCain doesn't have to worry about abortions and forced ultrasounds because she can go to Norway anytime she wants, you know, and they don't bother her there. If she needs an abortion, she can afford to go anywhere she needs to go.
Well, she got all bristly because on MSNBC, they went through the Rolodex of rich Republican women who will come on our show, and they have one card in there. It's Meghan McCain.
Yeah.
And she got all prickly about, well, you know, Barack Obama's rich, too. And
wears fancy clothes, and his wife wears fancy clothes. Yeah,
she is military royalty. She is military and beer fortune royalty. She will never want for anything her entire life, and she gets very pissed off when anybody brings that up, that she lives in a completely different planet than the rest of us do. And it's, well, Barack Obama's rich too. Yeah, he got rich off of book deals and speaking engagements and salary and racked up a few million dollars, and that's absolutely true. But Mitt Romney is gonna approach the billionaire club by the time he retires.
Well, and that doesn't make any difference to me. I don't care how much money he has. I don't care how much money Ann Romney spends on clothes.
No.
But when their policies are, hey, America, go out and borrow money from your parents to get ahead.
And that's the point.
That's the point.
That's the point. As William Gibson, science fiction writer, everyone take a drink, pointed out, I think it was in Neuromancer, and I'm sure I'm repeating myself, one of the characters looked into the blue eyes of one of the protagonists or one of the antagonists and realized that the very rich are no longer even remotely human.
Yeah.
They're not like us anymore.
Certainly, I wouldn't go so far as to say human because I actually have religious feelings about that.
Yes.
But definitely, and there have been articles in The Atlantic about this, they're definitely not American anymore.
No.
And I don't mean that in an anti-American way. They're simply at such a level where international boundaries don't matter. They can fly anywhere they want, go anywhere they want. They make money anywhere they want. They hire people anywhere they want. You know, they did a – I don't know if you saw this, but Mitt Romney did a conference call yesterday on Barack Obama's horrible record on employment, and it wound up that the Verizon conference call organizer was in Manila.
Yeah. And a fine city, by the way.
A fine city.
I used to live there, or just outside of it for a few years. And a fine city.
But you know, we need to talk about American jobs. Where are you? Well, I'm in Manila.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
And it doesn't matter to Romney. I mean, because, hey, I can hire anywhere I want. I'm a billionaire.
And that's
the point.
And that's fine. But he's running, you know, he is running for local sheriff.
Yeah.
You know, he's really, it's so weird to see this sort of international corporate robot creature trying to pack himself into Andy Griffith's outfit and run as the sheriff of Mayberry.
Well, and this is
and
topic one.
From there.
Yeah,
and
topic,
pretend he's from there.
Yeah, and topic one. Topic one of today's podcast. So yeah. Not to interrupt you, but
no.
Is
please.
You know, why does Mitt Romney want to be president, or does he?
Yeah.
And we're going to get into Fox News also, but Gawker had an article about Mitt Romney's case against a Mitt Romney presidency.
Yeah.
And really, it seems to me that if I were Mitt Romney, I wouldn't want to be president of the United States. I mean, that's just, that would be a waste of my time. I have so much more power than that as a billionaire investor.
Yeah.
You know, we've noticed that in this new book about ExxonMobil, which is, hey, presidents come and go. You know, uh-huh. We're here for our event horizon is so far beyond the next four presidents, because
yeah.
We are a profit-making shark that just eats everything in its path, and we will uh-huh. buy congresses and presidents, and we're the
country.
Most profitable country in the history of company in the history of the world. We have more income than 150 countries on this planet, and we don't care who's president, really, because, you know, presidents come, they come.
Yeah.
So I don't understand exactly why Mitt Romney, and he hasn't communicated why he wants to be president. I mean, that's a huge problem. That was a problem for Ted Kennedy, too.
There is a Mormon prophecy, mm-hmm. as I understand it, that says a Mormon will rise to become president of the United States and save the country or save the world or save whatever.
He may secretly think that he's fulfilling prophecy by doing that.
He might be.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would not – I'm not saying this is a Mormon thing. He would not be the first president
to secretly believe
that he and only he can save America from blah, 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 whatever the villain of the week is. And sometimes that's actually true.
I tend to think with Ann Romney that that's more of a boomer entitlement kind of thing. That's how she comes across to me. But – in any event,
that's what happened with George H.W.
Yeah, we talked about that. It was a daddy issue. You know,
well, it was George H.W. It's the next thing on the resume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, this is the next job you go for because Jack Donaghy's always wanted to be president of GE. Well, why? Because
that's the next thing. Yeah, I want to move up.
Thing that will fill this horrible hole where my soul should be.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the question is, does Fox want Romney to be?
I think that's a really important question. Yeah. And it's a good narrative to bring up because we always like to give people vocabulary on this podcast to talk with people about politics when they bring up, the Kenyan usurper and Barack Obama wants to take away my Medicare and so on and so forth is, do you watch Fox News? You know, I think Fox News really wants Romney to lose. I think Fox News really wants Barack Obama for another 4 years. That gives them something to talk about and gives you a reason to keep watching.
Yeah.
So think about that next time Hannity talks about the tyranny of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. That what happens to him if Romney gets in? What does he have to do for the next 4 years?
Well, and think about this. In terms of the Cubs.
Everybody take a drink. We're talking about
really
the Chicago Cubs.
It's been a century since they've won a pennant.
Yeah.
Now, do you really think that if the owners of the Cubs, which are in a magnificent ballpark in the third largest city in the American Empire, if they really wanted to win a pennant, they couldn't drop $1 billion on that team and win a pennant or two or five, mm-hmm. buy a bunch of great players? Of course they could. They don't want to because their business model is not dependent on their team winning. Is dependent on filling those seats every day and having TV revenue and merchandising revenue and the price of the tickets in the skybox where you look down one row and I have done this and seen Penny Marshall over there and Vince Vaughn is over here and it's a fun day at a sunny ballpark. Mm-hmm. And winning is just thrown in as an extra bonus, but the owners don't give a shit if that team wins or not. They care about the location of their real estate and the price of their investment. And every Cubs fan should get through their thick heads that's simply – they don't care about you. They don't care about winning at all. And that's fine. That works for them. But that's because the franchise is not run by people who are baseball fans. Mm-hmm. It's run by people who are business people.
Yeah.
Fox News is a business. It depends on the credulous attention and spending habits and viewing habits of 20 or 30 million morons. That's all it is. It's a game. And Barack Obama, having Barack Obama out there to hate, that mm-hmm. white hot fury that they can engender in the pig people with just poking those buttons is so much better for business than having George Bush in an office. When George Bush was in an office fucking everything up, that put Fox in a terrible bind because they really had to keep pretending George Bush wasn't a moron, and reality kept catching up with them. And with Obama in office, they don't have to worry about reality. They can just keep heaping everything that's ever gone wrong, imagined or real, through the history of time on the head of this one guy and call him every name in the book. And their octogenarian, oxygen tank dependent moron audience will sop it up with a biscuit.
Yeah.
And if I'm Roger Ailes looking at my business model, looking at, you know, the future of television, the future of broadcast, and the future of power, because this is what this is about. It's about mm-hmm. power. Mm-hmm. As long as they have Congress, as long as they have enough of a – they're enough of a bone in the throat of democracy, they can block anything.
Yeah.
At the local level, at the state level, at the federal level. They don't really give a shit about governing. They don't want any more laws. They don't want government to work at all. So if they are in a position to destroy the government through just – unified opposition, which they've shown for the last 3 years they're perfectly willing to do, and there are enough stupid people in this country to keep electing people like Alan West to Congress.
Well, and this is why David Gregory is Roger Ailes' best friend, because David Gregory persists in promoting the myth that it takes 60 votes to do anything in the U.S. Senate, which is a lie.
Yeah.
And as long as those kind of lies are promulgated, we can go on and continue to gum up the works, gum up the government, continue to convince people, government's evil, government's wrong, government can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And as you say, the centrism and the balanced media becomes the enemy of democracy.
The enablers.
The enablers. And I wanted to get back, too, to Fox and Roger Ailes and so forth. Someone asked me the day this week that Rupert Murdoch was declared an incompetent declared an incompetent business leader by members of Parliament to watch the stock price for Fox Media and mm-hmm. BSkyB, which is the British telecom thing that it looks like that is the one result of this actual declaration. Now, I wanted to find out how much teeth does this MP announcement about Murdoch have, and they can prevent him from buying more BSkyB stock, and they can prevent him from ownership. There's things they can do about that. But watch the stock price of those companies. They barely budged. And the reason is the pig people are still sitting in their Barca loungers, and nobody is going to take them away from Fox News mm-hmm. unless somebody boring and Republican and white like Romney allows them to go back to sleep.
Right.
So,
well, I want to add one small thing and force everyone to take yet a third drink.
They're going to be drunk in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah. Because I've been listening to this CD collection of Harlan Ellison stuff mm-hmm. that one of our fans sent me, which is really good. It's on the road with Harlan Ellison. Just hours and hours of his lectures and talking and so forth.
Yeah.
And this is something from probably the 80s or 90s, late 90s. He talked about whatever happened to the televangelists. He said everyone knew they were corrupt. Everybody you know knew these were corrupt. Everyone knew Jim and Tammy Banker were corrupt, huckster, you know, liars.
Scraping
who ripped
the money.
People off.
Yep.
And then one day there were no more evangelicals on TV. They went away. He said, but you know those people are still out there in their Barca loungers and their Twinkies at 2 in the morning with nothing to do. What happened to those people? He said, QVC.
Yeah.
Those people are simply bags of credulous idiocy to be
with credit cards. Yeah.
With credit cards. That's why they exist. They exist to extrude money and ratings for whoever can capture them. Mm-hmm. And however best that great wad of dumb people can be entertained, amused, and captured and used to generate profit.
And made to feel less lonely. And that's what QVC does. You know, it makes them your friend and puts you on the air and you get to talk about, I love your product. No, it's either I love your Jesus or I love your product. Yeah, it's the
same
thing.
And Mitt Romney is bad for that business model.
Absolutely.
He's really bad
for
that model.
Yep.
And so, I absolutely agree that the Republican Party and Fox News are now synonymous. The one thing I would where we violently disagree, verbally anyway, or intellectually, with people like Andrew Sullivan and David Brooks and the rest of these clowns, is the conservative, American conservative movement and the Republican Party and Fox News are all now synonymous.
Yeah.
There's still this rump battalion of expatriate, apostate, quote-unquote conservatives who continue to lie about what American conservatism is and always has been. People like Andrew Sullivan and David Frum, who has been all over liberal MSNBC pimping his book. David Frum, who is the creator of the phrase, the Axis of Evil, who's a speechwriter for George W. Bush, who will be voting Republican, who's trying desperately to find things to like about Mitt Romney. Because these people are paid pimps for their particular points of view, he said alliteratively. And they cannot – the minute they're forced to admit that this is not simply a political party problem, this is a cultural conservative problem, and the conservative movement has always been this way, and they've been part of this movement and either too stupid to realize it, or the money was too good, or that they just were happy to be useful idiots as long as the checks kept clearing or whatever. The minute they actually have to admit that the history of their movement predates whenever they happen to notice that the conservatives were out of their fucking minds, is the day they stop getting paid to be conservative public intellectuals, because they have no currency with that anymore. And that's one of the that's one of the reasons why centrism keeps rising up, despite the fact that everyone sort of secretly knows it's bullshit. It serves too many masters. It serves too many purposes. So I just wanted to add that, yes, there's a Roger Ailes Republican Party thing. There's a Republican Party Karl Rove thing, and there's a conservative thing. But now all three of those are basically the same entity now, and they're rolling forward on a business plan track that has nothing to do with whether or not Mitt Romney is in the White House, but has everything to do with keeping the mob at their feet, who provides them with all of their votes and all of their money, entertained and angry all the time. Mm-hmm. And Barack Obama serves that purpose oh so much better than boring white Mitt Romney.
Yep. We want to talk about the Occupy movement, because we got a mention. We got a mention over at Breitbart.com.
Yay.
Or we
sort
pretend
of.
We did.
Yes.
We pretend we did, because Breitbart.com said, Adbusters worries that the professional left is corrupting the Occupy movement.
Yeah.
Anytime anyone mentions the professional left, we point them to Google. Uh-huh. And if you Google the professional left, we're number one.
It's us.
It's us. So we wanted to point that out to Breitbart.com. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Breitbart.com. But really, we don't want anything to do with you, except we're laughing at you now. Mm-hmm. But there was an article in Mother Jones and also at Breitbart about this Adbusters claim that the Occupy movement is under threat. And Adbusters, which is a Canadian magazine that's awesome, and actually had a lot to do with advertising. I hate to put it that way, Adbusters, yeah. But that's what you did.
Promote
the Occupy movement, yeah.
Yeah.
Said in their article, will you allow Occupy to become a project of the old left, the same cabal of old world thinkers who have blunted the possibility of revolution for decades? Will you allow Move On, The Nation, and Ben and Jerry to put the brakes on our spring offensive and turn our struggle into a 99% spring re-election campaign for President Obama? We are now in a battle for the soul of Occupy, a fight to the finish between the impotent old left and the new vibrant horizontal left. I'm not going to change the name of the podcast to Horizontal Left.
No. No.
I might change it to Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Yeah.
Nobody's using that name.
Yes.
But
yes. That's a great name, Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
We talked about changing the name of our podcast to The Rachel Maddow Show, because yeah. More people would listen to us if
hey,
we did that.
Hey, Keith Olbermann's got a podcast. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, but, we'd want to string it out for about 6 weeks until we got fired.
Until sued. Until we got
no,
it.
Until we lost the job and then.
Until we left in a huff?
We left in a huff. and we parted company with our imaginary management. And then the big check from Al Gore would show up.
Al Gore.
Awesome.
We called Al Gore a bastard and walked away.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't realize how bad these people are.
Mm.
And hey, that may be true. It might not be true. But it didn't keep him off of Meet the Press, did it?
Oh, well, we love Keith Olbermann. And actually, we still have the countdown mugs that we bought the day after he quit MSNBC. So.
Yeah.
We can use those. We can go video and use countdown mugs and
have. They'll be our begging bowl when we go out to the train station.
Yeah, that'd be.
Anyway,
we're now in a battle for the soul of Occupy, Adbuster said. A fight to the finish between impotent old left and the new vibrant horizontal left, who launched the Occupy Wall Street from the bottom up and who dreams of real democracy and another world.
Yeah.
Let's occupy the clicktivists and crash the Move On party. Okay. All right. So we want to talk about this because we want to talk about this from the standpoint of getting shit done.
Right.
And I also want to ask you about organization. You and I both belonged to liberal organizations in the past.
I also went to – go ahead. My last 2 years of high school, I spent a big chunk of my time at places like this, mm-hmm. where it was all consensus and it was all, you know, driven by who didn't like – it was a mess. Mm-hmm. It was a delightful, creative, fun mess, but it was a mess. It didn't matter. It was inconsequential. The outcomes were interesting. But it was an experiment with consensus building and letting everyone do what they wanted to do.
Transparency and pure democracy of everyone has a voice and everyone can decide, and we decide by consensus and so forth.
Yeah. And there are
we both belong to organizations that meant a lot of good. You and I have both belonged to organizations that really wanted to change things and really wanted to disrupt the paradigm and make things better. Mm-hmm. And we've watched them fizzle out. And part of it is human nature. And I wanted you to talk about your experience, and I'll talk a little bit about mine.
Sure.
But I have noticed that it seems to me when I look at, first of all, I think Occupy has given a voice to a lot of frustration that a lot of people have that didn't identify with the racism of the Tea Party, but were still financially frustrated with what the banks have done and what homeowners have had to face and what all of us have had to face in this economy. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when I look at Occupy meetings and the way that people that claim to be from Occupy, and I think they are from Occupy, on Chris Hayes and so forth, talk about how they are going to go about making these changes and the wiggling of the fingers to indicate approval and the circles and the talking and the making these decisions in a very democratic way, somebody had to come in. I keep thinking in the back of my head, from the top down and say, this is how we're going to do things because it will be fair.
Uh-huh.
And so there had to be an authoritarian start to it. Not saying that that wasn't done with the best of intentions, mm-hmm. but there had to be both that and the money behind Adbusters to get the word out. And, you know, you are a victim of the tools that you need to succeed.
Yeah.
And then there's the human nature side of it, which you talked about in our pregame. And I want you to talk a little bit about the way that groups that mean well and want to do good work. Mm-hmm. often fail due to human nature.
Well, and if you would like a tool set for making sure people get heard, there's a thing called Robert's Rules of Order, which I learned when I was in student Congress.
Yeah, and I was in model legislature in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
There are well-established structures into which you can pour your organization. Which you can use as guidelines to keep things from bogging down. And the issue of human nature, flawed, delightful, pernicious, angelic human nature that all of us suffer from, myself included, is why politics was invented. Because if we didn't have politics, we would be shooting each other in the head. So you need a nonviolent way to settle disputes that are real between people who have claims on limited time, limited resources, or who want to take their society in different directions. And the way you settle those things without killing each other is called politics. And you cannot escape it. You cannot escape human nature. It just is impossible. There are lots of great systems, or not so great systems, or science fictional systems, or libertarian systems, or communist systems. They're all predicated on the assumption that if we could just change human nature, then this thing would work better. The whole Skinnerian approach to I forget the name of the book, and it's killing me that I forget. It's not Brave New World, but it's it might be, I don't know. It's Walden 2. I'm sorry, Walden 2. Predicated on the assumption that if you just conditioned people, read Walden 2, if you just conditioned society to behave in a certain way that was orderly and efficient, then your society would be orderly and efficient. Well, that's fine, but it never works. It simply doesn't work that way. And it doesn't work that way because in any group of people, you have all these competing forces. You have all these competing agendas. You have people who just want to sit in a meeting and have people pay attention to what they say. Yeah. You have people who want to waste time. You have people who have a very urgent sense of, you know what, it's all great that we're sitting around here. And this is not an indictment of Occupy or any other particular organization. It's just that, you know, the meteor is approaching our planet. Yeah. We need to act right now. Well, yeah, but we don't have a consensus. And the Rule 17 says no action can be taken. And those are organizations that I've quit because it was so clear that they had gotten so bogged down in self-referential, navel-gazing process questions.
Or they've gotten involved in the charismatic guy sitting off in the corner with all the pot in his pocket.
That's the other
wants
thing.
To
there's,
get laid. And that's
there's a woman who everybody wants to fuck.
Yeah.
There's the guy that everybody wants to fuck. Here's the guy who supplies all the weed.
Yeah.
Or just has a charismatic personality.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing about every human institution, it doesn't matter how many people are in it, a leader will emerge.
Yes.
It's how we're wired as mammals. Somebody will lead you. And I think it was Plato who said, but I might have gotten it wrong, I might have Aristotle, like there's a huge difference.
We'll get letters on that.
Yeah, we will. And that's fine. And I delight, because I don't have any notes in front of me. I'm relying entirely on memory for these podcasts. But you might not be interested in politics, but by God, politics will take an interest in you.
Yeah, yeah.
And as Hunter Thompson said, politics is the art of controlling your environment.
And I find it really interesting that everything you just said about Occupy and going against human nature regarding Occupy is true of Tom Friedman's fantasy world about.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. It's such that's the. You're like reading my mind. You're 3 minutes away.
But we've been married almost a year, folks.
That's the one we've dated for a slightly longer.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fantasy of centrism, the delusion, and the big lie of centrism is if we could just have people get along and not argue about stuff, then people wouldn't argue about stuff and they'd get along. It's a tautology. But the difference between Occupy and Tom Friedman is Tom Friedman has $1 billion and lots of friends in the establishment and has a book publisher who will publish anything that craps out of his ass and has a column in the New York Times that apparently he can never be fired from no matter how shitty his prose is or how stupid his ideas are. Occupy is a bunch of, you know, scruffy, hardworking, well-intentioned, deeply committed, passionate people who on May 1st apparently had the largest rally in their history.
Yep.
Planet-wide.
Worldwide.
And it wasn't covered by anybody.
Yep.
And therein lies the problem. Because I think I wrote in my notes, at the end of the day, you have a choice between going to the Vatican or creating Lutheranism.
Yep. That's it.
But if you want your movement to spread, you can certainly spread it through Facebook and Twitter, and I get that. I really do. But there are people controlling choke points in society that are media choke points, resource choke points, political choke points, electoral choke points. The reason people fought and died for the right to vote is because the right to vote really matters. Yeah. It really, really does.
But I don't think you can start Lutheranism in using that metaphor and then go and shit on, move on, Ben and Jerry's, The Nation, and Barack Obama, and say, those aren't our people. We're talking about real revolution, man. Well, that's fine, but you're going to be a fringe group then.
Yeah. Well, and enjoy your purity, because nobody's going to pay. And I am not going to speak in, and I'm not being facetious in any way. I'm trying to really avoid speaking as if I'm being derogatory talking like an old fart. Yeah, I remember when I was a teenager.
I really believed in shit. And Occupy has already changed the conversation from the insufferable debt to there are real needs and real problems that being faced by real people. And they have changed the media conversation about the economy. But if you want,
let me put it this way. If you want to live in a country where nobody's shoving an ultrasound up your girlfriend's vagina because they think that that's what Jesus wants them to do, and they control the legislature, and they control access to health care, and they can force you to do that whether you like it or not, because you don't have Meghan McCain's money to avoid that little bear trap, then you have to change the law. And to change the law, you have to get into politics. And to get into politics means you have to get dirty.
And for some reason, the right-wing blogosphere understands that.
They embrace it. They embrace it because they – and this is – again, this is a structural difference between the left and the right. Mm-hmm. They embrace it because they want to destroy government to make it possible for corporations and churches to more directly control your life. They don't want an egalitarian system. They don't want a flat system. They want to make sure corporations can directly control what you say and do and think, and that when you step out of line, there's a church official there to shove an ultrasound up your girlfriend or your mother's vagina to remind her who the fuck is in charge. That's what they want. It should be painfully obvious to you that that's what they want. And all the wishing and all the praying and all the consensus building in the world will not stop them from doing that. What will stop them from doing that is organized political, social, and media action, with the key being organized. You simply have to at some point just stop changing the conversation and start controlling the conversation. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do that, as far as I can see throughout all of human history, is to focus yourself and start taking on the boring job of getting elected to public office.
Local, right, school boards and local congressional races and so forth, right.
And the other institutions.
Not that Occupy isn't doing that, and I don't think this Adbusters article speaks for all occupiers either. No. I consider myself an occupier, and this from the standpoint of working for the kinds of change that they're advocating.
Absolutely, and it is not like it's an either or proposition.
No, it's not.
You need to give up your ideals. Turn on Chris Hayes any Saturday morning. And look at someone who's deeply embedded inside of a major media corporation who has clearly not given up his ideals and is clearly wears his causes on his sleeve and makes no bones about the fact that he believes certain things and he thinks those things should be done. I think it's an excellent model. I think it's an absolutely delightful model. And we need 1,000 of him and we need tens of thousands of people like that and like Melissa Harris Perry and like Rachel Maddow to cite some examples in PTA. Yeah. And local school boards and mayors of small towns and mayors of large towns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We need those sorts of people in the system. But to do that, they have to do the boring stuff of getting on ballots, getting people to vote for them, making difficult decisions about how to expend resources. Mm-hmm. Do you want to raise taxes? That's a real question. There's all kinds of boring municipal realities when it comes to governing and getting your agenda and getting your stuff implemented. And wishing for it will not make it so. Wishing for it will get you killed because the people who are busy organizing will simply roll over you like a tank.
Yep.
They don't care that you're there. And we talked about that,
the one part of May Day that got covered was the violence.
Yeah.
You know, these two guys decided they might have some explosives to put on a bridge. And Sean Hannity will never stop talking about that.
That will be
Sean Hannity forever, is Occupy as a violent movement.
Stop raping people.
And
the reason that they can get away with saying that is they control their own news network.
And there is a vacuum of coverage on the other side.
And this is the other institutional barrier I wanted to mention, which is money.
Yep.
And everybody needs money, as I repeat again for the umpteenth time. That's why they call it money.
Maybe we should read the letter that we got.
Yeah. That's a idea.
From our listener, Jay. I'm just going to call him by his first initial, but we really appreciate this letter and this donation that we got. We got a few donations this week. We appreciate them very much.
We did.
And we got a number of good letters, and we want to thank the person who wrote to us to say that Driftglass's advice about mentors helped him in the workplace. We don't have time to read your letter on the air today, but we wanted to thank you for that. And Driftglass and I had a kind of a fight this morning because we had about 15 topics we wanted to talk about, and we have to boil it down to what we have time to talk about. And we will be getting back to workplace issues, I promise you. We also want to talk about Paul Ryan's Medicare plan, and I have a whole page of notes about that, and we will get to that too, I hope, sooner rather than later. But some things just have to be set aside. At any rate, this wonderful letter came in this week. Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, I just read on Crooks and Liars that Andrew Breitbart paid James O'Keefe $65,000 to blog about his acorn sting. That is true, by the way.
Yep. Yep.
You got to be kidding me. Then I started thinking about you two, the professional left, my Bonnie and Clyde of liberal observation. We liberals don't enjoy the benefits of having sugar daddies with bottomless pockets. That seems to be the exclusive domain of the right wing. And when I see the triumph of stupidity that passes for contemporary American political discourse, it's ludicrous to think that people like O'Keefe, David Brooks, I had to mention his name in case you forget to do so in the next podcast, and their ilk make fortunes while intelligent, thoughtful, and caring people like you struggle every day to get by. All of that's true, too. In a perfect world, Brooks, Friedman, and those other fools would be working in the steam pits, as it appears they have no other useful aptitude than shoveling hot air and shit. But for my part, I am grateful for having a somewhat decent paying job, with no paid time off or health insurance. We're sorry to hear that. Even if it was the best I could get after being unemployed for 6 months. That's all? He writes. Yeah, I know. Being unemployed for only 6 months. Good for you. Some of my friends were not so lucky. Last year, one of my closest friends took his own life. He had worked for the same company as a contractor for 15 years. After giving so much and working so hard for the company, he was simply let go because of cutbacks. My friend learned a hard lesson. Hard work and dedication count for little in today's corporate culture. His 15-year contribution counted for nothing in the end, and without a college degree, he was pretty screwed, and he knew it. And you and I had a long conversation about that this morning, too.
Yep.
The college degree thing and that David Brooks is writing about today, and I'm sorry we don't have time to talk more about that. At least in the over 11 years that I knew him, I turned him from a conservative to a liberal. The secret, most people really don't have the facts, but when you present to them one-on-one and they are open to it, folks don't like finding out just how much they have been lied to, how much they were being suckered. Educating friends can make the difference, but often it can only really happen one person at a time.
I can totally vouch for that, by the way.
Yep. And I think the way you put it, it's not just one person at a time, it's one friend at a time.
Yeah. Someone who will listen to you that you can actually talk to and
they're not going to put you down for being snookered. You know,
that
doesn't work. When you insult someone's intelligence, that doesn't work.
They're willing to and it involves being really prepared all the time.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I said earlier in the podcast that if you start talking politics with someone this season and you say, you know, I really think Fox News wants Romney to lose, then you're taking the conversation in a direction away from that person and not saying, are you so stupid that you watch Fox News? Oh, my God. You know, because that just shuts them down. They're not going to be interested in hearing that. Mm-hmm. But if you start questioning the media that they're watching, you know, next time you watch them, think about what's going to happen to their advertising dollars if Romney wins. You know, that's a very good question.
Mm-hmm. And it's one that you're not making a judgment about.
About
them. You're giving them something to meditate on.
Yep, yep.
Anyway,
back to the letter. All of this is a really long and tangential way of saying that we as liberals need to do more to support our people who put themselves out there preaching our gospel. To that end, I'm giving you, and then I'm just going to say, what I would call a generous donation.
Uh-huh.
giving that much is a big deal for me. But damn it, it's the last lesson I've retained from my Baptist upbringing.
Well, save the best for last, my friend.
Yeah.
That's what I said. Yeah.
You two do terrific work. And it has been a long time for me to do my part, if just this little bit, on your behalf. I hope my donation helps you. And I sincerely thank you for all that you do.
Yeah.
And we appreciate so much. And, oh, wait, you and I were talking this morning, Drift Glass, about how could we do this once a week? Yeah. Well, every day, 5 days a week. And I said, if I had an intern to respond to emails, I could probably fit it in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, because we reply to everyone.
Yeah.
And it's part of the happiness of doing this job is hearing from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't discount that, but I also don't discount the amount of work that is. And just so you know, we appreciate you writing to us. It means a lot to us to hear from you.
We do.
So. You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
The right spends money because they want power. The left tries really hard and can't figure out why their message won't go out there because we can't quite wrap our heads around the fact that if we don't financially support our institutions, they will go away.
Yeah, and I think part of it is a lot of the people that work for those institutions, including us, money is not our primary motivator.
No.
And so we take for granted. I think we take each other for granted a lot, mm-hmm. and that can't happen. I try whenever possible, when a blogger asks for money and is doing a fundraiser, mm-hmm. I personally try to send $5.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's impossible. Sometimes it's possible. Whenever it's possible, I do. I say, you know, this is worth it. It's worth $5 just to say, yes, I want you to stay in business.
Yeah.
And that's not saying that everyone can do that. A lot of people can't. It breaks my heart when I get a letter and a contribution from someone who tells me they're on SSI or they're disabled mm-hmm. or they're, and we
yeah.
get that. We get those letters. I'm disabled and I'm living on, you know, less money than it's humanly possible, but I'm sending you $3. My gosh, don't do that. You break my heart when you do that.
And let me flip that around. I have gotten, and this is not a fundraising show.
No,
this is simply, I'm hoping, a rather
we're trying to have a conversation
discussion.
About power and money and how to do more good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get more bang for your buck. Yeah. And I have worked for organizations that went chasing grants.
Yeah.
That they had X amount of overhead to cover and X amount of payroll to meet. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I find myself thrown into a meeting about, I don't know, the digital divide or whatever. And
yeah.
which had nothing whatsoever to do with my organization at all.
Yeah.
But, and I come back and I sort of fill in the rest of the senior management. And the question, and I don't have any idea what this has to do with our business model or why we're doing this at all. And the answer was, well, there's money attached to it.
Yeah, we have to.
And
do it. Yep.
And if you start something up and you once you become an institution, once you have a payroll and you have an overhead, you have to keep funding up. And liberals are just fucking terrible.
Well, and I'm terrible at it. And part of I won't sell my soul for that. And you and I have talked about this before.
Well-to-do upper middle class.
Yeah, yeah.
Big donors are terrible at funding the grassroots. They mm-hmm. just are. They're mm-hmm. just got off at it.
Yep.
The
yep.
right pours money everywhere. They want to make the desert bloom, and they just spray money at everything. The left are just fucking stingy. And I'm not talking about our donors, because this is what I wanted to say.
Yep.
I sent out a bunch of thank you notes to some donors who had sent me $5 and $10, which is great, and I really appreciate it. I mean, I really, truly, I'm not being facetious. I mm-hmm. immensely appreciate it. And they always come with a nice long note. And I get these notes back. I got two or three of them back yesterday or the day before saying, I wish it could have been more. I'm so sorry it couldn't have been more. I'm like, dude.
You sent a total stranger $5. Are you kidding me? That's a miracle. That's a miracle.
I'm still amazed that I can sit in front of a blank sheet of paper and do something and someone will think it's worth paying for on spec.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that still astonishes
me. It does astonish us. And what we do, I mean, I've made a decision and we've discussed it. Mm-hmm. Is when someone sends us money, we send a thank you. If they send a certain amount, we send them a snail mail thank you. And then we leave them alone. And I'm sure we could raise a whole lot more money by pestering people and, you know, selling our email list or putting together an email list and emailing everybody once a week. Don't forget to give us money. But I'm not going to be a dick. And I don't like people who do that. You know,
and yet I do understand why every day my email box has four or five messages from
DCCC or DCCC some candidate or Alan Grayson or yeah, whatever.
And we laugh about it because it's Dear Drift. You know,
Dear Drift because it's the Facebook. They're getting you off of Facebook. Yeah.
And I get that they have overhead to make. And what we're talking about is simply the physical reality of doing this sort of thing. Yeah. Because one of the larger messages we wanted to mention today is that we are in the middle of a renaissance.
Yeah.
We really are.
Everyone needs to celebrate that in spite of how depressing the news is.
Seriously, if you are pay attention to podcasting at all.
We wanted to say Kenneth Quinnell put together a list of liberal podcasts. We have linked it twice at our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And if you notice anyone missing, we noticed Bruno and the Professor was missing, so I sent that out today. If you notice someone missing, you can mention that at our Facebook page, or there's an email address at the list also to let people know that, oh, you forgot so-and-so. But it's a long list of podcasts, of liberal podcasts that are going on that are really – a lot of them are really good. And this is an amazing thing that's happening. People are talking and talking to each other and talking to issues and broadcasting and changing media. Media is changing because of all of us working on this.
And this is something you really can't – like blogging was to the media in 2003, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. It still is, frankly. You can hold them up side by side and say who is doing a better job articulating the rage and pain and truth, and who's doing a better job talking about that which the media refuses to talk about. That, not trivia, but stuff that's really important that no one in the New York Times except for Paul Krugman and no one in the mainstream media will talk about because it is – directly in their financial interest to avoid talking about it. Blog, you could hold those two things up. You could say, oh, here's Stephen Gilliard here. I'm just going to pull him out because he can't get mad at me because he's dead. And you could pull out Tom Friedman or David Brooks and compare them and say, which one of these people is doing a better job of doing what a journalist should do?
Yeah.
And you could hold them up. It was black and white, no pun intended. And that's what's so fun about this. Is that I don't feel the distance that separates me from the people you can flip on in your car radio or the stuff you read in the New York Times is large at all. The difference is institutional. I'm on the outside. You are on the outside. They're on the inside. And that's really the only difference anymore. And that's what makes it interesting. That's what makes it a horse.
And we need to celebrate that. And that's the point.
We do.
I realize the news is depressing, and I realize it's hard sometimes to focus on politics. I mean, I told you last week, I'm done. I just want to turn off everything and knit for 10 years. I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. I was just so disgusted. And we all hit that rock bottom.
Yeah.
But coming out of that, I realized, oh my gosh, look at all of the people who are actually doing media.
Yeah.
And making media and being the media. And we need to celebrate that. We need to, as Jay said, we need to support it. You don't have to give to this podcast. If there's another one that does the job for you more, pay up.
But you have to understand that it all goes – it's all very fragile.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I thought about that. I've been thinking about that this week that, you know, we're going to have kids at home for 3 weeks.
Yep.
Coming up at the end of this month. They're going to be home for 3 weeks. And so we're going to have to reschedule our recording of this podcast to the nighttime after they go to bed, like we used to do when you had a full-time job.
Yeah.
And, you know, what happens? You and I have done this for 126 episodes.
I know.
Without missing a week.
And the thing about renaissances is, or renaissance, whatever the plural is, it never feels like a renaissance when you're in the middle of it.
And we need to recognize and acknowledge it. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
But we really need to realize we're in the middle of it and celebrate it. And so go listen to your podcasts and celebrate and donate and give what you can and support them because it's worth it. And the other side is doing 10,000 times. I mean, I was thinking about – it made me very sad to do the math and think about how long it would take you and I to make James O'Keefe $65,000 from Breitbart.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I have both blogged for 7 years and podcasted for 126 episodes. We haven't seen that money. I mean,
we could
blog for another 7 years and we still wouldn't see that amount of money. So, that's why your $5 donation makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about. I hate to do this, Drift Glass, but at the end of our recording, but because I'll have to put this in someplace, but we didn't talk about Norman Ornstein.
That's true. We did.
And
you want to do it?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Topic number 17.
Well, just the idea that once it's said on the pages of the Washington Post, all of a sudden it has to be discussed. And what Norman Ornstein said, and no one will paraphrase him this way ever, is liberals were right all along.
That's exactly right. And as I noted when I did my search, the word liberal appears nowhere in that article.
Yep.
This is an article in the Washington Post, for those of you who haven't read it, for the three of you, where the way they are marketing themselves to nonpartisan, postpartisan, serious thinkers at think tanks.
Inside the Beltway,
Inside the Beltway, who've written, I think they wrote The Broken Branch, which is a perfectly fine book. And they have reached the conclusion that the problem with our political system is the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
Just is. They're reactionary, they're depraved, they're nuts, and
they're not fact-based, and you can't argue with them because they're there to block everything.
And the only reason their article has currency is because they are establishment creatures who published it in the Washington Post and who can get on the Chris Matthews show and who can get on television because they have the right contacts and agents, and they can talk about as one person I know, because it's me, has put it 1,000 times, reporting as epiphany things thoughtful liberals have been saying for 30 years.
Yeah.
This is not news. The fact that the problem with this country is the Republican Party, and I would argue the conservative movement, is not news to anyone. But breaking into the conservative beltway world, breaking into the Chris Matthews, I hate to say it, Chris, breaking into the David Gregory world is simply not permitted. Liberals are not allowed in there. And the fact that we carry the truth with us everywhere we go is precisely why we're not allowed in there.
Yep.
So, this article got a lot of commentary. Oh, my God, can you believe they had the gall? They said it. Oh, my gosh. Yes, it's true. Blah, blah, blah. And that's great. That's wonderful. And my only question for both these gentlemen, where the hell have you been for the last 30 years? And as a liberal, I'm delighted to hear people paraphrasing things that every liberal I know has been saying for decades. Mm-hmm. But at some point, and I don't believe this anymore, but at some point, don't you actually have to acknowledge that when it comes to this issue and Iraq and the economy and education and the social safety net, don't you have to say, hey, there was actually this one group of people that was right all along about everything, from Nixon to fucking Reagan to Bush to Republican Party. There actually was this one group of people who usually get things right. And those are the very people we simply never allow anywhere near a fucking microphone in this country. Because it would put David Gregory's career at threat.
David Gregory works for Northrop Grumman and Exxon and GE. And that's what
that's
we need. And that's who pays the salary. So,
well,
I don't want to get depressed because we are moving toward a renaissance of media in this country.
You're in the middle of a renaissance.
And look at him. You're listening to it. So, awesome, awesome, awesome. We're so glad.
You're soaking in it, at least. Soaking in it.
And we want to thank our listeners. Thank you for listening to us and supporting us. You can listen to our podcast for free with no download and no registration at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. If you forget that website, you can Google Professional Left, and we're right there at the top.
Hey, there we are. Look at that.
We're at our Facebook page, and that's where we post all of the links that are articles that we have discussed. Even the Breitbart article is linked over there at our Facebook page, although I do put a warning up in case you don't want to click on that. We're on iTunes and through our fabulous app available at the iTunes Store. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio. Stitcher Radio is going to do some sort of new politics things. I got an email about that. So that might be something people want to look into. They're going to do a new politics searching by keywords in the transcripts of these podcasts, which is kind of cool. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that.
Oh, I thought searching by keywords was Moby's new album.
Yeah, probably is. And we are on Netroots Radio, netrootsradio.blogspot.com, from 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern on Saturday nights at Netroots Radio. We appreciate your contributions. You can make a contribution at our website, where there is a PayPal button, or you can mail us a letter at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. That goes to both of us, and we love hearing from you. Every week, we change our website to put up a new internet kitty. And this week, our internet kitty, who will be at our website and our Facebook page, is named Lenny Bruce, which is awesome. Hey, Lenny. We're glad to have you as this week's internet kitty. If you have an internet kitty to send us, please, on the subject line of your email, put internet kitty so I know that that's what that is. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at either our email or our snail mail address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, the internet kitties don't give a rat's ass who Ann Romney is wearing.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.